This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The death toll rising and the number of people missing from Texas flooding up as well.
At least 173 people now unaccounted for. At least 110 deaths are confirmed, many of them children. 27 girls and counselors were killed at Camp Mystic along the Guadalupe River. Five campers and a counselor still missing.
ABC's Lana Moise, parts of Ruidoso, New Mexico, devastated by recent wildfires, more prone to flooding there. Three people lost their lives in flash flooding on Tuesday. Officials say a tentative deal has been struck between 9,000 union workers in the city of Philadelphia. The union not getting as much money as they'd have liked. The deal still must be ratified, but it will eventually mean trash will start getting picked up again in Philly. Russia firing a record 728 drones and 13 crews and ballistic missiles into Ukraine overnight. Ukraine says it was able to shoot down nearly 300 of the drones. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has cleared the way for the state to institute a ban on conversion therapy. The court ruled that a Republican-controlled legislative committee's rejection of a state agency rule that would ban the practice of conversion therapy for LGBTQ plus people was unconstitutional. The 4-3 ruling from the court comes amid the national battle over LGBTQ plus rights. Governor Tony Evers issued nearly two dozen partial vetoes last week when he signed the state budget into law. Perhaps the most significant, according to the governor himself, was the removal of a 2029 deadline to close Green Bay Correctional Institution. Evers has proposed closing the 1898 prison as part of a broader overhaul of the state's correction system. He proposed that plan back in February and said it would cost $500 million. But last week, the governor said the legislature hadn't engaged with his plan or proposed their own, and he objected to settling a firm deadline without one in place. He removed the 2029 deadline to close Green Bay Correctional. Still, the budget keeps $15 million to begin planning for a prison realignment and potential closure of the prison. A proposed bill that aims to make it easier to access government records is currently awaiting action in the Wisconsin State Legislature. The legislation would make it easier for groups who pursue legal action over government records to win back legal fees for their expenses. It states that legal fees must be awarded to the requester of government records if a court determines that the filing of the lawsuit was a substantial factor in the decision to release those records. The bill was approved by the state Senate in May and advanced to a hearing in the state assembly in June. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
The Brewers and the Dodgers, game three today. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens from AmFam Field in Milwaukee, where the Brewers and Dodgers are wrapping up their series. The Brewers winning again last night, 3-1. Rookie pitcher Jacob Mizorowski throwing fastballs over 100 miles an hour. What was it like facing the Miz for the first time? Dodgers manager Dave Roberts.
We hadn't seen him before, and the stuff's really good. The fastball's pretty special, and, you know, it's hard to find silver lining when a guy strikes out 12 guys.
The game televised nationally on TBS. Announcer Brian Anderson interviewing manager Pat Murphy live during the game when he let out a swear word over the air by accident.
Murph, thanks for spending some time with us. We've got to get your thoughts, what you've seen so far from your flamethrower, Jacob Mizorowski. Pretty elite stuff here as
Mysterio
sends one to left. Call
get out
Murph.
Of here.
It's D. It's caught at the wall.
Yeah, it looks like you get it off the end a little bit.
That's the Brewers manager, Pat Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be mostly sunny today. Our high right around 82 this afternoon. Tonight, nice and clear. We'll drop to 63 for a low tomorrow. More sunshine with a high of 84 with a chance of thunderstorms tomorrow night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 65.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to like bring it back to people talking to each other about what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Years ago, I had some, I think I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, like, sure you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wore sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen a curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Joining us next time is Pat Kreitlow of Mornings with PK, and Trigvi Olsen, senior advisor at LP, joins us to discuss national and state issues and a what's worse on pizza.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. News from the Center, WRCE.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 8:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday morning, July 9th. Parker Olson in Madison Studio A2, meteorologist Brittany Merlot and Earl Ingram all standing by here. Coming up tomorrow in our 8 o'clock hour, we'll be talking to Congressman Mark Pocan. Coming up later today in this 8 o'clock hour, we will be talking to State Senator Kel DeRoyes. We will also have Melissa Baldoff here with this week's climate check and James Kelly with an update on some of the stories he's following in western Wisconsin. But first, let's bring in meteorologist Brittany Merlot with that update on the forecast, because it is gorgeous everywhere, or is it just me? Is it just the CPAP machine? I'm getting enough oxygen now. I just had a great night's sleep. Is there only gorgeous weather here? Am I that, rose colored glasses? Or everybody else getting this too?
It's mostly you. I mean, western parts and southern parts. So you are in the good spot right now.
Okay.
So this is good for you, Pat. How was last night? Just amazing.
Oh, I feel so much better. I mean, honestly, I thought it was going to go the other way. I would be like draggy and go, I couldn't get used to the machine. It was noisy and it was strangling me. And instead it was exactly as everybody told me it would be. That you feel better, you feel refreshed. Sherry, instead of being concerned that she wasn't hearing me breathe, it was now off-putting that there was no snoring, that it was so quiet. And that's a better problem to have. I think we all agree. So
absolutely. God, I'm so happy for you guys.
Oh, I'm no regrets about this decision whatsoever. So yes, it is gorgeous here, and I hope it spreads to others. Tell us whether it will or not.
Yes, Pat's joy will spread to the entire state. The sunshine will make it to every single person today. But there are some feisty clouds still sticking around, especially into central parts and northern parts of the state. We are still looking at dense fog in places, too, especially in Mosinee, Juneau, and Boscobel, even into Siren, Wisconsin. So patchy fog out there, a dense fog advisory still in effect until 10 a.m. for Bayfield, Ashland, and Iron counties. But of course, that high pressure system is going to dominate today and most of tomorrow. So plenty of sunshine on tap. Highs today will rise to the mid 80s for a lot of us south and west. For the north and east, mid 70s today. We are going to stay sunny and dry, like I said, tomorrow too. It's going to get a little bit more muggy, though, especially into the western areas and down south in the state. It's going to start to feel humid, mid 80s statewide tomorrow. And then we are looking at some showers and storms moving in possibly tomorrow afternoon in the southern half of the state and then taking over for Friday. And it could be pretty heavy at times. There are places that could see 2 inches of rain, maybe more. And of course, these storms are kind of packing a punch with some heavy brief downpours, where even yesterday we saw 1.5 inches into Waukesha area, kind of creating some issues out there, too. So be careful out there. Don't let those highway puddles pull you in.
No, not at all. All right. Mm-mm. Brittany, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
All right. A reminder, you can always follow what we do at Up North News by signing up for our daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe up there in the top banner for our weekday newsletters and my Sunday morning one that focuses on Wisconsin politics. All right, let's visit with Earl Ingram. A couple of different things going on as he covers matters in Southeast Wisconsin for Civic Media, not the least of which is a podcast series that we haven't talked about for a while that we will kind of get promoted here in the next few minutes. But more importantly, we were talking last week. Earl was getting set for working a football camp with Gilbert Brown. And, you know, the weather's been nice. Earl, good morning. Did you get the camp underway?
Yeah, we kicked it off yesterday with over 220 young people, ages 6 to about 20 years old, two separate camps, both 4 hours apiece, starting at 8 a.m. and the first one to 12, and then we take a two-hour break, and then those from 13 through 20, from 2 o'clock until 6 o'clock. And so we were honored to have the Hall of Fame Green Bay Packer Leroy Butler show up yesterday and just really give a monstrous speech, along with the mayor, the chief of police, and other dignitaries who grace us every day.
You know, I'm painting with a bit of a broad brush here, but I hope folks get the main point. There are pro athletes who are real divas. They are really full of themselves, and they don't do a lot for others. There are other pro athletes who never forgot where their roots. They never forgot how much work it was to get where they are. And you sometimes wonder at these motivational conferences, why are there so many athletes there? Because there are certain athletes who are just that way. They've taken all that they've done, and now they're ready to channel it into motivating others. And that certainly sounds like what Leroy Butler was doing yesterday.
Well, people may not know it, but Leroy Butler is from Jacksonville, Florida. Gilbert Brown is from Detroit. And their connection to the city of Milwaukee is unbelievable. The Green Bay Packers aren't situated in Milwaukee, but the two of them have made a signature commitment to the city of Milwaukee and the Central City children and families ever since they were Green Bay Packers. So they've left an indelible footprint in our communities, and we are better having Leroy Butler, Gilbert Brown do the things that they've been doing now for the past 15 years in our community.
So what did you enjoy most about having the camp get fired up again and having all those kids getting busy? What was the best part of your day?
Well, it brought me back to, I'm a guy who ran the largest youth tackle football program in the state for 20 years. And here in the city of Milwaukee, children ages 6 to 14, we had four young guys move on to play pro football, and countless numbers of them play in major universities and state universities across the state. And so missing that, I've been away from it for 4 years and 5 years, and just being back on the football field around football and the fraternity that football is. And so just being back around it is enough for me.
I can totally see that as well. And I think we may have touched on this last week, but I definitely want to hit it again, and that is the whole notion of these kinds of organized programs, the structure, the activities that you do together. And that is not, you know, something that's isolated to, say, a place like Milwaukee. I think of my own grandsons who have not been part of team sports, and how much more, you know, they could get if they were on a team and get that kind of structured activity. It's not for every kid, don't get me wrong, but Earl, I'm betting that it was kind of the dawning of a new realization for some of those kids yesterday that, you know, they want to do something that involves teams like this.
Well, I'll tell you, it's what really is critically important about what you just said is the person who runs the organization. And there clearly are some people who don't understand that it's about children and not about them. And so I realized that in the 20 years that I ran my league, that it was about children and that we had to focus on children and not the adults. the parents and the coaches who sometimes would become wayward. But the lessons that I learned in sports go far beyond me and what I've been doing and in your lifespan and my lifespan. It can go back, you know, centuries, the importance of organized activities for young people.
We're talking to Earl Ingram, who also, along with the football camp and all that he does, also has a podcast series here on Civic Media. The podcast is called What's Going On with Earl Ingram. And it was Luke Mathers who pointed out to me the other day that there is a dedicated page to the podcast at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. You can just click shows in the top banner or go to civicmedia.us/shows. And at this point, I think I see 6 episodes of the podcast that have gone up so far. I know it, we talked very early on about the one which is an interview with Dr. Howard Fuller. But can you tell us just a bit about a couple of these other episodes and, you know, why you decided to do them?
Well, you know, I'm kind of in a partnership with the Medical College of Wisconsin. And I think it's critically important that having these platforms that especially many of the people who listen have physical ailments. And so I had one podcast that I brought on a specialist who talked about high blood pressure and stroke. And May was High Blood Pressure and Stroke Month. Yesterday, I did a podcast with a urologist who, it's not up yet, but it'll be up soon, with a urologist who talks about prostate cancer. And so we really get into those things more so than what people normally hear in passing. But these are critical issues. People are dying, and they need to understand that there's prevention, but there's also the earlier you catch something, the more likely it is in today's science and advancements in healthcare that you can prolong your life if you're just aware of it. So a lot of what I'm going to be doing is dealing with the Medical College of Wisconsin and all the myriad of doctors and specialists that they have. I'm also going to deal with politics. I'm also going to be dealing, you know, with some very dedicated people who have dedicated their lives to serving others.
We definitely see that through an episode on walking into Black History with the NAACP. And, you know, also on the lighter side, Milwaukee in the movie scene is one of your more recent episodes that you did as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you, there's some coming up where there's some young men who, through just great philanthropic commitment by the Daniels family, are just a tremendous family that I'm going to do a series on. And they have taken somewhere over the last 25 years, I'd say at least 500 young boys from the city of Milwaukee, traveled the world. And they become just outstanding ambassadors all over this country. They've gone to major universities, and they've made a commitment to come back to the city of Milwaukee and dedicate their lives to making things better. I'm really excited about that podcast and the stories that are happening with those young men, what they've done. It's really should be a national story. I want to make sure that we capture that.
That's awesome. And again, you can catch that in Earl's podcast, What's Going On with Earl Ingram, and head over to the Civic Media website to learn more about that. Earl, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for the visit this week.
All right. On my way to see the grave digger.
All right. Good luck. Have a great time with the camp. Always a pleasure. So, yes. All right. He has a lot of fun. Let me answer a question about that, because we got it on the text line about the show, about Earl's show, from John in Oshkosh. Says, is there a link on the app? Not a link to that specific podcast, but if you're using the Civic Media app, here's how to go about doing it. Down in the lower right corner, down at the bottom, it says home and my station, because you can pick a home station, and more. Click on the more button, and then one of the options is about Civic Media. And when you click About Civic Media, it takes you to the website. From there, go to the main menu, click on Shows, and you'll see Earl's podcast and all the others that Civic Media provides to us as well. A local update is next for some of you. Others will talk to Melissa Baldoff and Climate Check, and then Senator Kelda Roy is coming up in 15 minutes, live from Lake Wissota here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
Let's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the Founding Fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we are still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses for free. Find a mentor today at SCORE.org.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on wrce.fm/contest-terms. As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Joanne Krulotz, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
There's a challenger to one of Wisconsin's longest tenured state senators in southwestern Wisconsin. The redrawn 17th State Senate District has another 2026 candidate. Assembly Representative Jenna Jacobson, a Democrat, announced her campaign at an event in Ridgeway Monday. She joins a field that already includes Democrats Lisa White and Todd Larson. Jacobson is seeking the seat currently held by Republican Howard Markline, who is the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee. The JFC is tasked with putting together the state budget each year. Jacobson said that Markline hasn't done enough to represent the interest of southwestern Wisconsin.
The 17th Senate District, our district, has time and again been forced into referenda to fund our schools because Howard Markline has chosen power over people. He's chosen ideology over voting for the needs of the district. That is irresponsible governing.
The 17th Senate District includes Crawford, Grant, Iowa, and Lafayette counties, as well as parts of Vernon, Dane, and Rock counties. Before the district lines were redrawn ahead of the 2024 election, the 17th District stretched from Juneau County in central Wisconsin down to the state line. Markline, who was drawn out of the 17th District and placed in the 14th District, easily won his three previous elections for the seat under the old maps, including in 2022, by more than 20 percentage points. He has not yet announced his future plans. Governor Tony Evers says $10 million in state budget funding will help alleviate food insecurity in Wisconsin. During a Monday stop at the Community Partners campus in Wausau, Evers said it's an issue that was highlighted during the COVID-19 pandemic, calling food security extraordinarily important. Evers, who signed the 2025-27 state budget last week, said the $10 million is not enough, but it's a start. The Democratic governor also praised the format to the Community Partners campus, which brings programs for medical care and food security under one roof. Evers also made stops in Milwaukee and Eau Claire on Monday to highlight budget provisions. The governor's newest budget will include $5 million a year to go towards a state film office and creating film and TV production tax credits. Action Wisconsin founder Katie Heil says Wisconsin was missing out on plenty of opportunities because it didn't have a film office or tax incentives. Heil says having the credits will also help attract and retain the type of talent that usually had to leave the state in order to pursue a career in film or television. Prior to the governor including it in his budget, Wisconsin was one of just three states that didn't have a film office. The Grant County Sheriff's Department conducted a death investigation Friday following the report of a man found lying on the ground. Southwest Health Center EMS and Grant County deputies were dispatched to the scene. Upon arrival, 23-year-old William Schaefer, who lived on the property, was found deceased. An autopsy was performed, and it was determined William Schaefer died of natural causes. Average gasoline prices in Wisconsin have fallen 4.5 cents per gallon in the last week, averaging $2.92 a gallon, according to Gas Buddy's survey of over 3,000 stations in Wisconsin. Prices in Wisconsin are 3.5 cents per gallon lower than a month ago and stand 40 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. According to Gas Buddy price reports, the cheapest station in Wisconsin was priced at $2.69 a gallon, while the most expensive was $3.99 a gallon, a difference of $1.30 a gallon. The national average price of gasoline has fallen 5.3 cents per gallon in the last week, averaging $3.09 a gallon. The national average is down 1.1 cents per gallon from a month ago and stands 37.4 cents per gallon lower than a year ago, according to Gas Buddy data compiled from more than 11 million weekly price reports covering over 150,000 gas stations across the country. The national average price of diesel has decreased 3.2 cents in the last week and stands at $3.64 per gallon. Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy, said, quote, "Nearly every state saw average gas prices decline for the second straight week, even as the nation celebrated July 4th with the lowest national average for Independence Day since 2020. He added, that downward momentum may continue as OPEC's weekend decision to boost production by a larger than expected 548,000 barrels per day in August adds further pressure to oil prices, potentially accelerating supply builds. If tensions in the Middle East remain contained and the Gulf is spared from major hurricanes, the odds are improving that the national average could dip below $3 per gallon later this summer. But in the meantime, we could see the national average falling to its lowest summer level since the pandemic. New data shows more Wisconsin residents have been suffering from liver issues related to excessive alcohol consumption over recent years. According to a recent study, the number of Wisconsin residents who died as a result of one of the most common alcohol-related liver diseases rose from about 330 in 2019 to nearly 450 in 2023. The data also found that alcohol-related liver diseases leading to death are becoming increasingly common in women and younger people between the ages of 25 and 44. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is reminding residents about a helpful tool for fishing enthusiasts across the state. The Wisconsin Fishing Finder is an online resource that can help anglers find good fishing spots with an interactive map of the state's lakes, streams, and rivers. When residents use the map to select a body of water, it will provide them with information on what fish can be found there and what regulations are in effect. It also contains helpful information on preventing the spread of invasive species and the locations of boat launches. The homes of some universities in Wisconsin regions were vandalized with pro-Palestinian messages. The Wisconsin State Journal reports that at least four homes were vandalized early Friday. Messages in red spray paint on the driveways read, "Regents are complicit in genocide and UW blood on your hands." Madison Police Sergeant Matthew Baker says the properties were also splashed with fake blood and had letters taped to the doors with a list of demands. Last year, UW-Madison students established a pro-Palestinian encampment on Library Mall before it was taken down after 2 weeks. The UW system is urging anyone with information about the vandalism to contact local law enforcement. You've been listening to WRCE's local news on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google Play stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. Universities of Wisconsin President Jay Rothman announced his proposal to increase tuition for resident undergraduates by up to 5% for the 2025-26 academic year. Rothman's proposal would increase tuition by 4% at all universities, with an optional 1% additional for a maximum of 5%. All universities, except UW-Green Bay, plan to adopt the additional 1% if the proposal is approved by the Board of Regents, which will consider the plan Thursday. Further, UW-River Falls is seeking an additional increase as part of an ongoing effort to support student success initiatives, which would bring its resident undergraduate increase to 5.8%. The region's vote on Rothman's proposal comes after lawmakers and Governor Tony Evers reached agreement on a new state budget for the next 2 years starting July 1st. Under the budget, the UWs would receive a funding increase of about $256 million, much of which is dedicated to specific initiatives. State funding represents approximately one-fifth of the UW's total revenues. Compared to UW comprehensive peers, resident undergraduate tuition increased just 7.7% during the 10-year period from 2015 to 2025, well below neighboring states, which ranged from increases of 21.7% to 28.8% during that same time period. Overall, the total proposed cost of attendance for resident undergraduates will increase on average of 3.8% when segregated fees and room and board costs are considered. The regents approved segregated fees in April. Universities would increase non-resident undergraduate tuition by either the same percentage or same dollar amount as resident undergraduate tuition under the proposal. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwava. Actor Mark Ruffalo has taken shots at podcaster Joe Rogan, insinuating that Rogan is late to the game with his ICE raid outrage. The Kenosha-born Ruffalo said it's a little late now to pretend like Project 2025 didn't exist and wasn't the playbook all along, saying about Rogan, you are either not that smart or not that dumb. It's hard to tell at this point. Ruffalo has a host of projects set to drop in the coming months, and despite a solid performance as always, is still probably trying to forget he was part of Mickey 17. AMC Theaters recently announced they would play more commercials before movies to help offset a budget deficit. That's probably not something most moviegoers wanted to hear, but in a move in the other direction, beginning July 8th, the movie chain will offer 50% off tickets on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. The chain has also announced they will offer discount popcorn and soda on those days. This will allow the movie-going public to save a few bucks while still trying to add a few extra pounds. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwaba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
It is going to be mostly sunny today. Our high right around 82 this afternoon. Tonight, nice and clear. We'll drop to 63 for a low. Tomorrow, more sunshine with a high of 84 with a chance of thunderstorms tomorrow night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people that voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to like bring it back to people talking to each other about what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Maggie Dawn.
At 4:30, I'll be joined by Celly Flores, a DACA recipient. We'll explore what it was like watching the 2024 election unfold, and what it's like now watching Donald Trump attack immigrants from coast to coast.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
All right, it is time to continue the longest-running fight here at Civic Media. And you know, the Civic Media folks, we're buddies, we're pals, we all get along. But there are some fights, and the current fight between me and Todd Albaugh is which one can have Senator Kelda Royce on as a co-host, you know, most often in the future when she decides she doesn't want to keep doing this politics thing all the time because she's so good at explaining the news to us all. Senator Kelda Royce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm so happy to be with you, Pat. Nice to have someone fighting over me because my kids are not interested in that.
I understand. Yep. So I was on with Todd the other day. And by the way, Todd and I will be together at the Northern Wisconsin State Fair for his show, 2 to 4 p.m., Thursday and Friday. So if you're in the Chippewa County area, come on out to the fairgrounds of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair and see us Thursday and Friday from 2 to 4 at the fair. So you've been with Todd, and you've put out a statement as well on, you know, the most recent Supreme Court decision. We're going to get to the state budget matter in just a moment here. But I, of course, as you know, have been fascinated by yesterday's Supreme Court decision because of all the nerd stuff behind it.
Yes.
It is about, you know, the decision was about, you know, the so-called conversion therapy. And there's a lot that can be said about the ways that that is used to essentially terrorize, you know, young people and the LGBTQ community. But the reason for it, the reason for that decision is one of several instances where Republicans have abused trust in the legislature. There was gerrymandering the maps. There's holding up all the nominations. There's abusing the Joint Finance Committee to hold back money that was already approved. And then there's this one that's a bit more obscure, but, you know, a bill becomes a law, but a law only becomes the law through the rules that are written to enforce the law. And Kelda, you know firsthand, we both have worked with that particular Administrative Rules Committee. Mm-hmm. That committee is not the backstop that it used to be for the few times that a rule maybe was, you know, out of line. The Republicans are using that committee in a far different way now, aren't they?
That's right. I mean, it's yet another example of how Republicans have been using their ill-gotten gerrymandered power to unconstitutionally put themselves not just in the legislative branch, but to try to override what the governor and the executive branch are charged with doing. And so the court's decision, well, it has the effect of clearing the way to make sure that young people are not subjected to these abusive practices like conversion therapy. The mechanism is that the legislature doesn't get to have the final say. The governor's the one who decides whether to sign laws or veto them. It's not the legislature.
I love the fact, too, that as Republicans are caterwauling about this, they're again saying, oh, Tony Evers wants to make himself a king. And they'd say the same thing about the partial veto powers and everything, when it actually is the legislature that has tried to turn into a de facto monarchy by saying, nope, we're going to take budget power away from the governor. And, you know, even if we don't have the votes to override his veto, we're going to find other ways to sabotage what he is otherwise legally able to do. This is a party that's run the legislature for 14 years that is long overdue for some reform, even if it has to come from a state Supreme Court.
Absolutely. And to be clear, like this, you know, the court decisions that have been smacking down the legislature have not just been the liberals on the court, right? A lot of these decisions have been 7-0, 6-1. And yesterday's decision is another victory for Wisconsinites who want to have a government that is responsive to their needs, right? To us as the people, and not just to the right-wing special interests that would love to see, you know, the most extreme elements of the Republican Party controlling everything.
And I think, as I mentioned earlier, looking back at these past few decisions here, and I have been clear, I did not agree with the Supreme Court's reasoning on limiting the partial veto powers, but I get it. I understand what they were saying. But here's my larger point. I think yesterday's ruling on the rulemaking process, unrigging the gerrymandered maps. Mm-hmm. I feel like now with this progressive majority, and yeah, sometimes it's actually more than 4-3, sometimes it's 5-2, sometimes it's 7-0. But I feel like this progressive majority on the court is actually leading Wisconsin state government down a path of reform that you can't abuse the rules process, and that a governor can't, you know, push the envelope on veto powers. This seems like the most fair-minded court we've had in my memory.
Yeah, it's really heartening to see. You know, I remember when I was growing up and when I was a law student, the Wisconsin Supreme Court was really held in very, very high regard. And it was looked at as even on par with the U.S. Supreme Court in terms of the quality of the reasoning. And that was Shirley Abrahamson and Ann Walsh Bradley, who were really intellectual lights on that court. And it is gratifying to see that this court is helping to make Wisconsin a place where everyone can thrive. And they really are, they're not a rubber stamp for one side or the other. And I think that's very healthy. That's what we ultimately want to have in a democracy.
Yeah. We talked in the last hour with Heather Dubois-Bornon from the Wisconsin Public Education mm-hmm. Network and Corrine Hendrickson about their unhappiness with what was in the state budget agreement in terms of public education, in terms of childcare. All of that is well known. You have explained your reasons for your vote on the bill as well. So I don't want to dwell on it too much longer. But I knew you were the right person to help us pivot from here, because you can be against this budget, but you can also understand why some of your Democratic colleagues supported it. And
Absolutely.
So how do you go forward in helping voters understand that there is frustration among the progressive community right now, including with each other to a degree, but those aren't the people you should be taking your frustrations out on next year?
Right. And in fact, I think to be fair, it isn't just progressives who are frustrated, right? Education, public school funding has been the number one issue that we've heard about for many years on the budget committee. And it's been a long standing, you know, for the last 15 years, our kids have not gotten an inflationary increase in schools. And when inflation goes up and you don't get an increase, that's a cut. In addition to, of course, the devastating cuts of the Walker years. So our kids have really been getting shortchanged. And people have every right to be angry and frustrated about that. I'm angry and frustrated about that. That said, it is better than no budget at all. And the slight increase in special education funding is going to be helpful to many school districts. It will help offset the no increase in general aids, which is going to be devastating. You know, 2/3 of districts are going to have less money than they had last year because of the general school aid being held flat. But I think that we have to look beyond. If we want things to change, then we cannot continue to empower Robin Voss and the extreme Republican Party. We have got to have a Democratic trifecta. And that's really what I'm going to be focusing on and working towards. Ultimately, we can fund our schools appropriately. Our kids deserve better schools, but that's only going to happen if we have a Democratic trifecta.
And so our guest last hour talked about a rally that will be held at the Capitol a little after 9 a.m. This Friday, day after tomorrow. You're going to be there as well?
I am. Childcare is something I'm really passionate about, not just because it's important for our workforce and economy, but because every single kid deserves the best possible start in life. That's when so much brain development happens. And it shouldn't be rationed based on how much money your parents have.
Senator Kelda Royce is our guest here, and let's turn to where the legislature goes from here. The budget's passed. That's the one bill that, you know, theoretically always has to pass, and then everything is extra. I noticed yesterday it was like somebody unloaded a dump truck of bill introductions. Now that the budget's done, everybody is circulating ideas for new bills. So there's some, there'll be some time in the fall and the next spring before everybody goes out to campaign again. Are there things that you think now beyond the state budget are gonna get done, which obviously would have to be done in a bipartisan fashion? Or is it more the pessimistic view that very little is going to get done for the rest of this session?
Well, you know, I always try to be optimistic because I think it's important. If you're going to work in politics, you have to, you know, hope is really what drives you. But I think realistically, it's going to be very difficult. The Republicans are in disarray. They are unable to govern with these narrower majorities, and they see the writing on the wall that they are very likely to be in the minority in the next session. And I think that's exacerbated some of the conflicts between different members of the Republican caucus. That said, you know, there are a lot of big issues that I'm working on that I think should and could have bipartisan support. I think about, you know, regulating AI. This is a huge emerging issue that a lot of state legislators are not paying attention to yet. And it's already transforming our society. We really need to be thinking about this. Things like data privacy, right? At a time when the federal government is abusing our data and really weaponizing forces in the government against our own people, we need to be very careful about what data is accessible. I think a cell phone ban, I would love to see a bell-to-bell cell phone ban in schools. I think there's a lot of bipartisan support for that. Regulating social media and the way that social media can influence and harm our kids. So there, you know, housing issues, there's a lot that I'm passionate about where I think we can have hopefully some bipartisan cooperation.
Here's one that won't happen, but it should, and that would be the Medicaid expansion, given Absolutely. What the Trump administration and Congress just decided to do to Medicaid. But I vented on this yesterday, so I just want to give you the chance to vent as well, except I can vent at one of your colleagues. Maybe you don't want to. But I read this from the Channel 13 website yesterday. I'm going to read it again. State Senator Jesse James, Republican of Thorpe, said the biggest ticket item was increasing the hospital assessment and access payments to the federal maximum and reinvesting that money back into the hospitals. This untapped federal money is an additional pathway to help support our hospitals, to which I add rhetorically, well, Senator, what the hell do you think the Medicaid expansion was?
Exactly. I mean, honest to God, I don't know how Republicans get away with calling themselves fiscally responsible when for years they have rejected hundreds of millions of dollars coming into the state every year. Wisconsin taxpayers could pay less to cover more people. And instead, we are paying to cover people in Illinois and California and all these red states that have expanded Medicaid. All of our health insurance costs go up when we have more uninsured people. Our rural hospitals and care centers struggle, nursing homes close because we're not able to get them the revenue they need. They have too much uncompensated care when people are uninsured or underinsured. And Republicans have rejected over and over, and that means that about 90,000 Wisconsinites have gone without the health care that they need. It's bad for our economy, it's bad for our state budget, and it's, of course, bad for our health.
And then finally, how much on pins and needles do you feel, and not just you, all kinds of folks in the legislature, folks outside of the legislature, as you wait for things to happen, obviously starting with Governor Evers making a decision on running, but there's congressional seats, there's assembly reps running for state senate, which opens up an assembly race to happen. And what does that feel like knowing that, you know, while you think about your own future, whether you want to stay in the state senate or do something else, do you feel stuck in political limbo right now?
Well, it's an exciting time. I mean, I think, you know, the governor should take the time that he and Kathy need to think about this and make a decision. It's a really momentous one, right? 2026 is going to be, I think, a huge year for Democrats. It's a big, big opportunity. So if he decides it's the right time to pass the torch, I have no doubt that we will be able to hold the governor's office. But that's his decision to make. And I think I'm just really excited because I am working on having a Democratic trifecta. And We had the launch of a great state Senate candidate, Jenna Jacobson, this week. I think we'll have more in the coming weeks, and I'm focused on helping them win.
Trifecta. Get used to hearing that word a lot and the importance of it here in Wisconsin. Senator Kelda-Royce, it's always great. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Take care, Pat. Thank you.
All right. A local update is next for some of you. Others, we'll have some final news and notes from Lake Wissota, including James Kelly in the Civic Media Newsroom in Chippewa Falls. All coming up next. You're up north.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Years ago, I had some, I think I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me, and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, like, you sure you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wore sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen my curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on wrce.fm/contest-terms. Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
There is a look at sports on this Wednesday morning, July 9th. Beginning with the 2027 baseball season, a double first base will be required in high school baseball games to minimize the risk of collisions by runners and fielders. Elliot Hopkins, National Federation of High School Sports Director of Sports and liaison to the Baseball Rules Committee, said, adding the double first base is symbolic to the evolution of the sport. It will immediately address running lane violations, and it will further protect the players from violent collisions that have occurred at first base. A batter runner may use either side of first base on a base on balls or on an extra base hit to the outfield when there is no chance of a play to be made at first base. Interference is to be called on batter runners if they only touch the white portion on a force play at first and collide with a fielder.
Similarly, it is obstruction if a defensive player only touches the colored portion of the base and collides with the batter runner. Another rule is added to address defensive player meetings as charged conferences. Each team, when on defense, may be granted not more than one player-to-player meeting during an inning. Umpires shall deny any subsequent defensive team requests for that half inning. That is to, again, go into effect in the 2027 high school baseball season. In softball last night, the Mission remains undefeated, erupting for 13 runs in the sixth inning, defeating Richland Baptist Temple 2-26-7. Quinn Tidrick had a home run, while Lyle Fish Jr. and Seth Paulson went 5-for-6. St. Mary's down Boscobel Assembly of God 22-7. Julie Cairns was 3-for-3 on the night with an RBI. Rookie of the Year Father Kuhn and Ryan Plemer both added home runs for St. Mary's in the win. The Knights of Columbus outscored Grace Community 19-3. Josh Kepler scored 3 runs, and Caleb Frawley had 6 RBIs to lead the Knights. And Richland Baptist Temple 1 beat Free Methodist 10-5. Andy Niemeyer led Free Methodist, going 3-for-3 with a double and 2 RBIs, and Braden Burns had a web gem catch as well. Action continues next week, July 15th, in Church League softball at Kroska Park. Quail Run Tuesday Men's Golf League action. Aaron Halverson had the top score of the league. It was a 36, including birdies on hole 1 and 8. Last night was week 12 of 20 weeks of the season and the start of the second half. Brian McCarville had a 38, including a birdie on hole 3 and a birdie on hole 8. Ken Nick Sr. with a 38. Also, it was Brent Montre with a 39. Neil Mahoney with a 40. Pat Keegan, J.J. Klatt, and Caden Dilley all had 41s. Caden birdied hole 7. Other golfers with holes played under par: Andy Marshall with a birdie on hole 1 and on hole 5. Jim Kataravic birdied hole 2 and hole 8. Scott Wallace with a birdie on hole 5. And Gage Wirtz with a birdie on hole 8. Flag prize winners: Jim Kataravic with a closest second shot on hole 2. Brian McCarville had the closest to the pin on hole 3. Terry Wheaton, longest putt on hole 4. Jeff Jelinek with the shortest drive on hole 6. And Jim Kataravic was the closest second shot winner on hole number 8 during Quail Run golf action last night. The Simons Sharks swim team had their opener in Richland Center Tuesday night against Lancaster and Reedsburg. Lancaster swam to first place with 535 points. The Sharks finished second with 416.5, and Reedsburg finished third with 183.5. Sharks relay teams that earned first place were the boys 8 and under medley relay and free relay team of Matthew Hardy, Dominic Fladerer, Emmerich Kalman, and Carson Earhart. The girls 11 and 12 medley relay team of Lauren Chambers, Claire Hying, and Kaylin Burns. And the free relay team of Lauren Chambers, Claire Hying, Kaylin Burns, and Madeline Ringelstetter. The boys 15 to 18 medley relay of Connor Hying, Lucian Hamlin, Braden Burns, and Will Harpin. And the free relay team of Morey Wright, Will Harpin, and Lucian Hamlin. Individuals who received first place finishes were Emmerich Kalman in the short freestyle, butterfly, and distance freestyle, Morgan Worthington in the short freestyle and backstroke, Madeline Ringelstetter in the backstroke and individual medley, James Waterfall in the backstroke, Braylon Olson in the backstroke, Connor Hying in backstroke and butterfly, Grace Fratz in the butterfly, Will Harpin in the distance freestyle, Clancy Hying in breaststroke and the individual medley, and Levi Fratz in the individual medley. The Sharks had 8 rookies make their debut, including Josie Norte, Catalina Morales, Grace Wilson, Lily Wilson, Juliana Muth, Cassidy Earnhardt, Carson Earnhardt, and Dominic Fladerer. The Sharks are back in action Saturday in Boscobel for the Conference Invitational. They will be back at home for a home meet coming up on Monday, July 14th. Rookie Jacob Mizorowski gave up a leadoff home run to Shohei Ohtani. Then the Dodgers failed to score again last night in a 3-1 loss. Three of the Brewers' four pitchers threw fastballs topping 100 miles an hour. Los Angeles has lost five in a row. William Contreras went 3-for-4, and Sal Frelick hit his seventh home run. Mizorowski earned his fourth victory in five starts, and Trevor Miguel posted save number 21. Andrew Monasterio of the Brewers says he is glad that the Miz is on his side.
Well, he's nasty, you know, so I would rather to play behind him than face him, to be honest. Yeah, he's awesome, you know, like that's a guy that's competitive. So that's kind of emotion, like competitive show. So, yeah, it's awesome to saw him doing that and like also what he did tonight, you know, that's very nice.
Jacob Mizorowski talked about facing future Hall of Famer Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, I mean, you have all respect in the world to face Kershaw and, you know, the 3,000 Ks. It's awesome to see a guy like that in matchup against him. But, you know, I saw something on online that he didn't know who I was, so I hope that he knows me now, you know. It's kind of cool. But, you know, it is what it is.
The Brewers will host the Dodgers again today. It's a 1:10 first pitch time. You can hear the action on WRCE, FM 107.7 and AM 1450. Stay tuned right here. Thanks for joining us for Pat Kreitlow Mornings today and the update on sports from Richland Center. I'm Phil Nee.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry. Preston, the Texas flooding has killed 110 people, but more than 170 remain unaccounted for. ABC's Matt Gutman is in Kerrville, Texas, and says recovery teams are committed to finding every person on the list.
I've been speaking with EMS officials who are telling me that they are going to scour every single inch of the Guadalupe River all the way down to its terminus at Canyon Lake. That's 125 river miles away. It's a process that could take months.
Three were killed in the vacation town of Ruidoso, New Mexico on Tuesday, also from severe flooding. Russia sending more than 700 drones into Ukraine overnight, also firing 13 missiles into the country. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky meeting with Pope Leo today, suggesting the Vatican could host peace talks to end the war. Shake up in the world of Formula One, Red Bull letting team principal Christian Horner go. He has run the team for the last 20 years, which included championships. Red Bull struggled, however, over the past couple of seasons. This is ABC News.